We are in Numbers, of course, 7th chapter. And the law of names again.
Numbers chapter 7. On the day when Moshe had finished setting up the tabernacle and had anointed and consecrated it with all its furnishings and had anointed and consecrated the altar and all its utensils, the chiefs of Israel, heads of their fathers' houses, who were chiefs of the tribes, who were over those who were listed, approached and brought their offerings before the Lord. 6 wagons and 12 oxen, a wagon for every 2 of the chiefs, and for each one an ox. They brought them before the tabernacle. Then the Lord said to Moshe, "Accept these from them, that they may be used in the service of the tent of meeting, and give them to the Levites, to each man according to his service." So Moshe took the wagons and the oxen and gave them to the Levites. 2 wagons and 4 oxen he gave to the sons of Gershon, according to their service. And 4 wagons and 8 oxen he gave to the sons of Merari, according to their service, under the direction of Itamar, the son of Aharon the priest. And to the sons of Kohath he gave none, because they were charged with the service of holy things that had to be carried on the shoulder. And the chiefs offered offerings for the dedication of the altar on the day it was anointed. And the chiefs offered their offering on before the altar. And the Lord said to Moshe, "They shall offer their offerings, 1 chief each day, for the dedication of the altar. He who offered his offering the first day was Nashon, the son of Aminadab, of the tribe of Yehuda. And his offering was 1 silver plate, whose weight was 130 shekels, 1 silver basin of 70 shekels according to the shekel of the sanctuary, both of them full of fine flour mixed with oil for a grain offering, 1 golden dish of 10 shekels full of incense, 1 bowl from the herd, 1 ram, 1 male lamb a year old for a burnt offering, 1 male goat for a sin offering, and for the sacrifice of peace offerings, 2 oxen, 5 rams, 5 male goats, 5 lambs a year old. This was the offering of Nashon, the son of Aminadab. On the second day, Nathaniel, the son of Zuar, the chief of Issachar, gave an offering. He made an offering for his offering, 1 silver plate, whose weight was 130 shekels, 1 silver basin of 70 shekels, according to the shekel of the sanctuary. Both of them full of fine flour mixed with oil for a grain offering, 1 golden dish of 10 shekels full of incense, 1 bull from the herd, 1 ram, 1 male lamb a year old for a burnt offering, 1 male goat for a sin offering, and for the service of the peace offerings, 2 oxen, 5 rams, 5 male goats, and 5 male lambs a year old. This was the offering of Nathaniel, the son of Zuar. On the third day, Eliab, the son of Helon, the chief of the people of Zebulun, his offering was 1 silver plate, whose weight was 130 shekels, 1 silver basin of 70 shekels, according to the shekel of the sanctuary, both of them full with fine flour, mixed with oil for a grain offering, 1 golden dish of 10 shekels full of incense, 1 bull from the herd, 1 ram, 1 male lamb a year old for a burnt offering, 1 male goat for a sin offering, and for the sacrifice of peace offerings, 2 oxen, 5 rams, 5 male goats, and 5 male lambs a year old. This was the offering of Eliab, the son of Helon. On the fourth day, Elizur, the son of Shadur, the chief of the people of Rabun, his offering was 1 silver plate, whose weight was 130 shekels, 1 silver basin of 70 shekels, according to the shekel of the sanctuary, both of them full of fine flour mixed with oil for a grain offering, 1 golden dish of 10 shekels full of incense, 1 bull from the herd, 1 ram, 1 male lamb a year old for a burnt offering, 1 male goat for a sin offering, and for the sacrifice of peace offerings, 2 oxen, 5 rams, 5 male goats, and 5 male lambs a year old. This was the offering of Elizur, the son of Shadur. On the fifth day, Shalumiel, the son of Zerushaddai, the chief of the people of Shimon, his offering was 1 silver plate, whose weight was 130 shekels, one silver basin of 70 shekels according to the shekel of the sanctuary, both of them full of fine flour mixed with oil for a grain offering, one golden dish of 10 shekels full of incense, one bull from the herd, one ram, one male lamb a year old for a burnt offering, one male goat for a sin offering, and for the sacrifice of peace offerings, two oxen, five rams, five male goats, and five lambs a year old. This was the offering of Shelumiel, the son of Zurishaddai. On the sixth day, Eliasaph, the son of Deuel, the chief of the people of God, his offering was one silver plate, whose weight was 130 shekels, one silver basin of 70 shekels, according to the shekel of the sanctuary. Both of them full of fine flour mixed with oil for a grain offering. One golden dish of 10 shekels full of incense, one bull from the herd, one ram, one male lamb a year old for a burnt offering, one male goat for a sin offering, and for the sacrifice of the peace offerings, two oxen, five rams, five male goats, and five male lambs a year old. This was the offering of Eliasaph, the son of Deuel. On the seventh day, Elishama, the son of Ammihud, the chief of the people of Ephraim, his offering was one silver plate, whose weight was 130 shekels, one silver basin of 70 shekels, according to the shekel of the sanctuary, both of them full of fine flour mixed with oil for a grain offering, one golden dish of 10 shekels full of incense, one bull from the herd, one ram, one male lamb a year old for a burnt offering, one male goat for a sin offering, and for the sacrifice of peace offerings, two oxen, five rams, five male goats, and five male lambs a year old. This was the offering of Lishama, the son of Ammihud. On the eighth day, Gamaliel, the son of Pedahozer, the chief of the people of Manasseh, his offering was one silver plate, whose weight was 130 shekels, one silver basin of 70 shekels, according to the shekel of the sanctuary, both of them full of fine flour mixed with oil for a grain offering, one golden dish of 10 shekels full of incense, one bull from the herd, one ram, one male lamb a year old for a burnt offering, one male goat for a sin offering, and for the sacrifice of peace offerings, two oxen, five rams, five male goats, and five male lambs a year old. This was the offering of Gamaliel, the son of Pedahozer. On the ninth day, Abidan, the son of Gideoni, the chief of the people of Benjamin, his offering was one silver plate, whose weight was 130 shekels, one silver basin of 70 shekels, according to the shekel of the sanctuary, both of them full of fine flour mixed with oil for a grain offering, one golden dish of 10 shekels full of incense, one bull from the herd, one ram, one male lamb a year old for a burnt offering, one male goat for a sin offering, and for the sacrifice of peace offerings, two oxen, five rams, five male goats, five male lambs a year old. This was the offering of Abidan, the son of Gideoni. On the tenth day, Ahiezer, the son of Amishadai, the chief of the people of Dan, his offering was one silver plate, whose weight was 130 shekels, one silver basin of 70 shekels according to the shekel of the sanctuary, both of them full of fine flour mixed with oil for a grain offering, one golden dish of 10 shekels full of incense, one bull from the herd, one ram, one male lamb a year old for a burnt offering, one male goat for a sin offering, and for the sacrifice of peace offerings, two oxen, five rams, five male goats, and five male lambs a year old. This was the offering of Ahiezer, the son of Amishadai. On the 11th day, Pagiel, the son of Okron, the chief of the people of Asher, his offering was one silver plate, whose weight was 130 shekels, one silver basin of 70 shekels, according to the shekel of the sanctuary, both of them full of fine flour mixed with oil for a grain offering, one golden dish of 10 shekels full of incense, one bull from the herd, one ram, one male lamb a year old for a burnt offering, one male goat for a sin offering, and for the sacrifice of peace offerings, two oxen, five rams, five male goats, and five male lambs a year old. This was the offering of Pagiel, the son of Okron. On the 12th day, Ahira, the son of Enan, the chief of the people of Naphtali, his offering was 1 silver plate, whose weight was 130 shekels, 1 silver basin of 70 shekels, according to the shekel of the sanctuary, both of them full of fine flour mixed with oil for a grain offering, 1 golden dish of 10 shekels full of incense, 1 bull from the herd, 1 ram, 1 male lamb a year old for a burnt offering, 1 male goat for a sin offering, and for the sacrifice of peace offerings, 2 oxen, 5 rams, 5 male goats, and 5 male lambs a year old. This was the offering of Ahira, the son of Enan. This was the dedication offering for the altar on the day when it was anointed. From the chiefs of Israel, 12 silver plates, 12 silver basins, 12 golden dishes, each silver plate weighing 130 shekels and each basin 70. All the silver of the vessels, 2,400 shekels, according to the shekel of the sanctuary. 12 golden dishes full of incense, weighing 10 shekels apiece, according to the shekel of the sanctuary. All the gold of the dishes being 120 shekels. All the cattle for the burnt offering, 12 bulls, 12 rams, 12 male lambs a year old, with their grain offering, and 12 male goats for a sin offering, and all the cattle for the sacrifice of peace offerings, 24 bulls, the rams 60, the male goats 60, the male lambs a year old 60. This was the dedication for the altar after it was anointed. And when Moshe went into the tent of meeting to speak with the Lord, he heard the voice speaking to him from above the mercy seat that was on the ark of the testimony, from between the two cherubim, and it spoke to him.
A lot of repetition, right? Should we move on to the next chapter?
No.
That's a good question. Anybody has an answer? Did you hear what you said? Why are all the offerings equal? Same amount.
God is no respecter of people.
All right. Anybody else have any ideas or questions? Okay, let's put this all in another perspective, okay, for half a second. Okay. First of all, we read in the first verse something that Moses did, which is recorded in the last chapter of the book of Exodus. Okay? And so in the last chapter of the book of Exodus on the first day, this is what Moses had to sanctify everything there was with blood and oil, right? You look at that in Exodus chapter 40, starting in verse 2. On the first day of the week, or first day of the month rather, this is what Moses had to do. He did all that kind of stuff, right? And so once again, as I said before, the book of Deuteronomy is not in a chronological order. The book of Deuteronomy is in a planned book of Deuteronomy, I'm sorry, Numbers. It's on subject matters. All it is subject matter. Each subject is related to the next one, to the next one, to the next one, not in some kind of precise timing cycle. This is very common throughout the entire book of Numbers. You can try to figure out what the order is, but the order is not the number. The order is what was being done. Before we begin on this chapter, we went through chapter 1, remember? And that had to do with something of counting all of the people of Israel and each one given, there was a leader assigned by God himself. Each man as a leader had a certain job and function based upon where he was going to be located. And chapter 2 tells you where they were to be located. Who was on the east side and who was on the south side, who was on the west side and who was on the north side. So we have a pattern here of relationship of what's going to be happening, where God is God is showing how he is operation, how he handles this thing in his method and not in how we may think. And the next chapter, on the third chapter, No, he went through all the names and all their dwelling places and all that. In the third chapter, we talked about the tribe of Levi and where they were located. A certain section was located on the east side, certain section was located on the south side, another section was located on the west side, and another section was located on the north side. So the tribe of Levi was divided in, and what was called, they will mingle with the group. Now, what this means is that the Levites of the south were to be part of and connected to the army that was part of the south. The ones in the west were connected to, and what they dwelt amongst, or to be joined with, should we say, or live with, the people who are on the west side, and so on and so forth. The north Levites to the north tribes, and the east Levites to the east tribe. That was surrounding the tabernacle. The pattern is for a reason. We will see later on, as we find out later, God willing, next week, why the Levites are so scattered amongst the tribe of Israel. Planned at the very beginning, from the very beginning, to do exactly what he has them in mind to do. So we go on, and then we find verse the fourth chapter, there were certain functions of each one of these four separate segments of the Levites. Now, we didn't find out the segments of the functions of the Eastern Army or the Southern Army or the Western Army or the Northern Army. That starts showing up later on in the book of Numbers. So there's a pattern here that God is showing us how he operates, how he functions, and his method of, what's it, M-O? Method of operation? Yeah, something like that. Anyway. And so now we have these 12 men and where they were camped and how far they were. And then we had a problem with something. I probably have a situation about someone being outside of the camp because of doing certain things and a payment had to be done and so on and so forth. And the Nazarite vow, the Nazarite related to the function of the Messiah. We talked about that last week. Now, here we are now in the seventh chapter, and it takes up 12 days. Very interesting to know it's 12 days. Now, not because it took 12 days to do the job. Each person, each what they call the princes, call the prince, that's a Hebrew phrase. What it means comes from the verb, a verb that means the one who takes up. Or one who lifts up. So a prince is one who lifts up or takes something up or carries something. Okay, responsible for the function which he is to do. Now, before they could travel to where they were going to be traveling, which is into the promised land or in the land of Canaan, there are certain things each one of these princes had to do. Each one of these princes had to stand where? They had to stand before the tabernacle, right? Or what I would call it, the congregation of, or I say the tabernacle of appointments. One use a Hebrew word, tabernacle of Moed. All right? You go, the object of the whole tabernacle, the object of the, quote, tent, was to go before the creator of heaven and earth's son, or in this case, the high priest. But in this case here, we talk about the tabernacle. Inside the tabernacle, we'll learn a little bit later on next chapter who was in there. And we'll go and find out what the purpose of it all is. And that, I've said before, they're not out there to protect anything. They're out there to be given appointments, assignments. And each one of these tribes and these leaders were given assignments, appointments. But before they could do anything, they had to become what we would call today, we'll go through that word more in detail perhaps next week. I'm not quite sure if I could do that today. They had to go through a, quote, ceremonial, end of quote, pattern in order to come up and be part of and function with and joined with that tabernacle, or that inner sanctuary, you want to call it. And so what did God want from them? Well, each one of these men had a certain function to do, right? And they were to have to do services in relationship to, we won't go through the Levites right now, because I'll talk about that next week. But let's go to the 11th verse. The 11th verse of chapter 7. Now remember, we went through some meaning of names. Now, when we went through the names the first time, each one of the names tells you a meaning of it. Now, once again, it's not the man, it's the definition of the function of something. Whenever God uses a person's name, it's not because their name is important. He uses a name to tell us something of what? No. Of whom? Of God himself. Remember, it's God who named Abraham. Now, does that not mean that Abraham was a great father? Because that's exactly what that word means. No, he represents something. He represents a great father. And he had a son who was technically sacrificed. But he was delivered by a ram taking his place. So he had the function of Isaac being a function of the great father or the father himself. You understand what I'm saying so far? Then we go down to Jacob, the surplanter. Now God seems to concentrate heavily upon this last person throughout the entire Old Testament and New. To all the sons of Jacob. He didn't say the sons of Isaac or the sons of Abraham, but the sons of Jacob. It's full throughout the entire book. Now we have a pattern here. And now Jacob's name was changed, you remember? And technically speaking, it was one who is a king, or one who is rulership with, or one who is a prince of, or prince like God. One who will become, not that Jacob himself in his personal life became a great man. He didn't become a great man. His father, grandfather, was a lot greater than he was. More frightened to be around him than Jacob. And even Jacob's father, Isaac, was more frightened to be around than Jacob himself. What happened to Jacob? He ran. He took off. Remember a time when two of his sons killed somebody? He left out of fear. Not completely trusting, shall we say that word, having confidence in, that word, believing in, whatever he wanted, that God would protect him. So he left. You understand what I'm saying? And he says he's the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And the last one in that series. And very important now, we're talking about the sons of Jacob here in the book of Numbers. Right? So now we have to ask ourselves a question. Now, names are important. I always pay attention to names. So why names were one and changed to this? Sarah, remember her name was not Sarah. It was Sarai. And now her name is Sarah. I know, just coincidental, God just used the name, right? No? He had something in mind, right? Every time God appointed these men in the book of Numbers, God himself said, that's the one I want appointed, and that he's the son of that man who is of the tribe of that person, of Jacob, or one of the tribes of Jacob. And so God's telling us a pattern, telling how he thinks and operates, not how we think, oh, how boring this book is. Now, each one of these men are required to come before God on their particular day Day 1, day 2, day 3, day 4, day 5, day 6, day 7, day 8, day 9, day 10, day 11. It doesn't tell you what day of the week it was or what day of the month it was, but we're going to have to do it the first month because that's what it talks about in the first month. But the first day of the first month, God has sanctified, had Moses sanctify the whole place, right? So we're going to go on now to this first month. And the name of the leader of the first day, what was his name? And what does Nahson mean? Comes from a basic verb meaning one who observes. The observer. Or what we have been translated in some of your dictionary, some of your languages, translations of a soothsayer. You know, one of those guys who worship gods, the different gods. That's not what they were. Identification of the word tells you what it's all about. Observing something. What was he observing? Well, not the man, but what is God observing? What is God observing? And what was the name of his father? And that means what? My kin is Willie, or my clan is Willie. They're going to go along with what is being observed. Right? And they are the tribe of one who his hand is out to present. Yoda means hand. The latter part means to present. So now we have a little bit of a picture. Something about God who's watching, and they're willing to go along with them, and the hand's out there to present something or to receive something. In this particular case, in this chapter, they're going to present something. All right? Now, we go on and on with all the silver cups and silver bowls and the weight and so on and so forth. Let's go down to verse 18. We'll go back to those in a minute. And we go back to verse 18 now. And this is the next second day. Here's the name of a man. And he was appointed by God. God appointed this person because of his name. Or God named him to tell us about God. I'll tell you this over and over again, and I know I've said it before, but I'll repeat myself again. The book of the Bibles from Genesis all the way to the end of Revelation is all about the creator of heaven and earth. How he thinks, how he acts, what he does, how he wants us to live, and everything on the sun. It's not about people. It's about God and his son. Remember what Yahshua said to the Pharisees? You read the Torah and the writings thinking you're going to have life. No, it's about me. All about me. And they didn't like it at all. Because they didn't understand, number one. He had not told them or explained them to them. Even his disciples didn't understand. And his disciples learned many years after his death and resurrection what it was all about. And this is the reason why you and I are able to look back on it and have another viewpoint. Because there's a very special message I'll talk about next week that lets you know where you belong. Or where God has, quote, moed you. All right? Because this is all about the camp or meeting place of Moed. Each one of these leaders had to go to the place to be Moed. Each one of the leaders of the tribes of Levi had to go to the appointment and go to the tabernacle of Moed. You understand what I'm saying? M-O-E-D, yeah, Moed. Thank you. I wouldn't know how to spell it in English the other way to try to take it in Hebrew and do it differently. But the theme to try to get appointment here is that when God appoints, you go before him. These all went before him, didn't resist it, didn't rebel. They went before him and did exactly what they were appointed to give. All right? So we have a pattern here. 12. Why 12? Why not 3? Why not 7? Well, what?
Tribe.
What does tribe mean? What?
Branch.
A branch that strikes out. Now, in the 10th chapter of Numbers, you'll find out more in detail what that's all about. God has 12 branches coming from a vine. All right? And who is the vine? The high priest. Your high priest, my high priest, is the vine. And we are the branches that stick out. Whether we number one, or whether we number 12,000, or 12 million, we're still a branch. And the produce is being produced from that branch. And this kernel creator of heaven's earth's father, I mean the high priest father, is out there picking it. Cutting it off. You know why? He likes wine. No. wine means life. He likes life. He creates life. He wants life. Okay? We'll get into the technicality of that much later in the future. But I just want you to get a picture here of how God works. Just think about Him and not about how boring the subject matter is, and repetition and repetition and repetition and repetition. Now, each one of these men were given a job. Now, on the second day, the seventh day, there's a man named, whose name was, on the second day, this person known as God, given of God, and a son of little known, insignificant. Oh, this one here comes from a father who is little known, or insignificant, unimportant, or not known, or put this way, people didn't pay attention to him. That's what the word insignificant means. Doesn't mean he's worse than the rest. Unimportant means no one paid attention. What? One that no one paid attention to, God is the one that gave it. You write that? Let's go on now. Just going real short here. Let's go on the third day and the 24th verse. Another man's name shows up. Remember, God appointed these men, and we break down the name of the man. We say, what does that mean? And the name of this one, on the third day, God is Father, Son of Strength. You get that? Verse 24. The children of the exalted. All right. You see the meaning of the words? This is not just a story of a bunch of men. Okay, now they're in charge. They got to go do this. They got all this, this plate, this bowl, this spoon, this oil, this thing. Make sure it's all the same. Sounds a little boring, doesn't it? Well, that's the problem, see? We are human beings. God goes through a great detail, a precision. Yes.
Were the people that were walking through this, did they understand the significance
no
of what they were
than,
doing?
That's right. They didn't understand the significance of it.
So it's written down for us.
The only one that I think, personally speaking, because God said, I'll tell him everything was going on. Now, Moses could not explain it back. He told, like Daniel, don't tell them, or like the book of John, Seven Thunders, don't tell anybody what I just said.
So that would mean that this was written for us and the future when people begin to understand.
And the future is almost a prophecy of them by itself, written in the book of Numbers. I'm saying almost. I'm not a person that knows prophecy, and I stay away from prophecy as much as I can because I'm really ignorant of it. Yes.
So the man that walked with God face to face, Moshe.
Yeah.
If Elohim said, I want that person, and he knew the name, knew the meaning of the name, you don't think that Moses saw the picture of what God was doing with that person?
I'd say Moses, yes.
Oh, okay.
Because they said, she asked the question, all of them said, well, except for one man. All right? Okay. Moses is playing the role of the Messiah? No, he's playing the role of the Creator himself. The Creator himself sanctified his temple. We'll get there next week. He said, I have sanctified this. Wait a minute. I thought Moses did it. No, I have sanctified it. I'm the one that sanctifies it, nobody else. Now we have a picture of a man doing something that God does for us to see high above what he does, how he thinks, how he acts, how he responds. And what he's doing it. He's not out there to wipe out anybody. He's out there to do something and to bring many sons into glory. Even the ones you can't stand. Even the ones that are, quote, your enemy. Even the ones that are vulgar in their actions. God said, I do not delight in the killing of a wicked man. He doesn't get no fun out of it. He gets no enjoyment out of it. He gets no pleasure out of it. When he destroyed the earth the first time, he wept. It wasn't pleasing to him. It wasn't fun and joy. It wasn't the greatest task he ever did. It was one of the worst things he ever had to do up to that point. Do you understand what I'm saying so far? I think you do. I see God so much differently now in my old age that I never thought I'd ever see. But nonetheless, let's go to the fourth day. Now it's in verse 30. Is that what it is? Verse 30. On the fourth day, I'm just going to read it and translate the words and you can understand what's going on here. On the fourth day, Rock is God, son of casting forth fire from a builder. That's what those names mean. First man's name means rock of God. Now, not the man. The man was not a rock of God, but he represents the rock of God. Who is the rock of God? Or God is rock. The foundation, the foundation, the foundation. But everything is built upon. He is my rock of salvation. When they saw the put on the whole helmet of salvation, put that rock on top of your head. Now let it rule, because that's what it does. All right, let's go on the next one. And of course, he's the son of one casting forth fire. Really fascinating. The God who casts forth, God is a rock, casts forth fires, and he builds. Now, when Yahshua said he's going to have his ecclesia, I will build my ecclesia. So we have a picture of the Son of God building his ecclesia. Yes.
The psalmist says fire precedes his coming in several places.
Oh, really? I didn't notice that. she always reminds me of that. I think it's kind of funny. Now, chapter verse 36, going through this chapter pretty quick because I don't have to go into great detail toward till we get to the end of it. Now, on the fifth day, the peace of God, rock of Almighty, God hears. That's what that statement means when you shake the names and names only. Did you hear what I just said? It's not the men, it's the name that stands for something. Well, I'm not the first person, by the way, that ever discovered this stuff. This is written long before I was born. And probably written long before the United States of America existed. In fact, long before the European Empire existed. In fact, maybe it was written way back during the time of Moses. So it's nothing new. And when you study, a lot of people study names of people. They're incredibly fascinating of it by itself. And you have to go down and find the verb base of it, because Hebrew is a verb-based language. It's an action language. Okay, totally action language. It's not sitting there dead. Hebrew is not a dead language. It's a living language, right? All right, put it in a literal sense. Even this is a dead English, dead Hebrew, okay, can't speak easy Hebrew anymore, it's still living. All right. Hadn't died. Is still walking around, still doing his function. Now, verse 36. Talk about, I just did that one, did I? About the peace of God. That's what Samuel means, peace of God. And the rock of Almighty is very... Zerach, El Shaddai. Zerach. We have a song we sing, I think it has Zerai. But it has Uri. It means rock. You know, and it's kind of interesting. The foundation is still of Almighty. Okay, let's go on to verse 42. And here now, we are on the sixth day, and this comes from a tribe called Gad. We'll talk about that in a minute. And now, it says now, on the sixth day, God has added, known of God, troops. God has added, those who he has added are known of God. That's what that second name means. Yes.
What is plurality?
God has added. It's very similar to the one that's also with the other name that's listed. God adds. He's adding something. What is he adding? Those that know God, or should say, known of God, or God is known of them, however many cases, what do you want to look at it? And they are to be troop. Now, let me ask you a question. What is a troop? One who puts on the whole army of God. A soldier. Fighting. Not against anybody. But against the principalities of the air. Alright? You need salvation from the principality of the air. You need the shield from the principality of the air. You need the breastplate against the principality of the air. Not against people, not against Christianity, not against Judaism, not against Muslims, not against this, not against that, not against flesh and blood, not against Democrats, not against the Republicans, not against independents, not against the British, not against the Irish, not against the communists. It's against the principalities of the air. All right, let's go on. Down to verse 48. Down 48. And here's this other name. Very similar to one before, but it's past tense. Verse 48. On the seventh day, God has heard the son of splendor, the children of double heap. God has heard splendor of the children of double heap. Fascinating of it by itself, don't you think? Maybe we'll go into detail on that one. We've already gone through that before in the past. Let's go to 54. This is on the seventh day. No, I'm sorry, eighth day. 54, eighth day. And here now, on the eighth day, payment of God. Rock is preserved to forget. Payment of God. Rock is preserved to forget. What are you supposed to forget? The payment. When God makes a payment for something, what occurs? The rock is preserved. That's the payment. And then what is forgotten? When the payment has been paid, what is forgotten? What? Don't give a ream. That's the plan of God. He said, I will not remember. I'll forget. Wait a minute, God remembers everything, doesn't he? Well, yes. However, either he's telling us a lie, that he says, I forgot, or he's playing a little game with us. See, you have to have confidence that God really has put it behind you. It does not exist. Yes, Jeff.
He chooses to forget. That's the difference. He chooses to forget. Which is actually a whole part of forgiveness is choosing to forget.
Yeah, it's gone. No payments necessarily be paid anymore. It's been done. Now the man didn't do this. God did it. So we read the sons of Joseph. We can't figure out how come the hands were switched. Oh no. The last one was the first one. Excuse me. Last shall be first, the first shall be last. The last thing was, God will forget. I'll increase you, multiply you, double fold, and I'll forget everything behind it. Play on words. The same was a play on words. Oh, God. God thought. God's actions. God's deeds. All right, let's go on now to verse 60. The ninth day. In relationship to what you got to say it. The ninth day, Father of judgment, Son of cutting a path, children of the right hand, or son of the right hand. The first name means Father of judgment. Second word is cutting a path. Third one is son of the right hand. Who is all that talking about? I mean, these are actually guys. This guy really was a father of judgment, and his father was cutting a path, and Benjamin really was the one at the right hand. Benjamin was replaced and became the right hand for a purpose, which we have not yet fully covered yet. So we see all these awesome things about names. Now, we can read this story, go on, and all the spoons and all the bowls and all the plates and all the stuff. But here, now, mention those names have been reversed. First time we talked about it, it was a tribe's name first, then the man's name, then the father's name. Here now, it's a man's name, the father's name, and then the tribe's name. Reversed in the opposite direction. Obviously, it was by accident, or they got bored and had to rewrite it differently, right? No, the story here telling us something. God does not waste his time with words to try to confuse us. He writes his words to guide us, to lead us, to show us. Sorry, what? Deliberate and specific. That's what's so beautiful about, I love reading this part. Yes.
So the roles switching reverse, but what about the location? There's still, is there something to that, what they're doing to function at that location?
Yeah, we'll talk about that next week.
We're not going to go there today.
I'm sorry. This leads us up to something, okay? And the book of Numbers is telling us this process, this process, this process, and God's going to extreme, minute, significant detail of what it's all about. Anyway, let's continue. Get down to the 10th day. Now you remember, this is the first day. This is the first month, right? We don't know what day of the month this occurred, but it's always the 10th day. 10th day of the time when they started working on it. But on the 10th day of the month, what are you supposed to do on the first month? You set aside. That's not written here, right? So don't get it confused. Don't try to correlate the 10th day here with what took place as a commandment about putting the sheep aside. This is a different function in the book of Numbers, telling us more about how God works, how God thinks, how God acts, and the pattern. Don't try to mix them in there where they don't belong. Can I make sense of what I'm saying?
Yeah.
All right. Now, on the 10th day, brother of help, people of Almighty, a judge. Wow. Think about that for just a statement of itself. The first thing, brother of help. Someone's going to help. Help what? Help what? The people of Almighty help them to do what? To judge. Okay. Judge. Now, you know, we know that Dan is the last one listed. And his name is not listed sometimes. And he's always called the one that's not listed in the book of Revelation, right? Where's Dan? Where's Dan? Where's Dan? He's the judge. Picturing not the man or the tribe or the people, but the judgment has not yet come. That's the reason why you have those 144,000, including Levites, are listed there, because it's leaving Dan out because, quote, I wait for your salvation. People mistranslated that. God is saying, I'm waiting for, why Dan is listed, I wait for your salvation. He's talking to the eternal creator of heaven and earth, not Dan. And I'm waiting for your salvation, your judgment. And here, somebody is going to help. Now, who are they who are going to help? Someone is going to help some people who are the people of El Shaddai. What does El Shaddai do? He's a judge. He makes judgment. Now, sometimes we look negatively at judgment. But over and over and over again in Scripture, judgment can be either in your favor or against your favor, right? Here, it's not against anybody. We're talking to people of El Shaddai. They're not judging the people of El Shaddai. People of El Shaddai are with the judge doing the job. Now, we don't quite see that yet, but there's a little clue there. We won't go there today in the book of, we won't go there. Just forget it. 11th day, verse 72. 72. Another man's name shows up. And remember, these are the precise order. How God has set the order in pattern. And it says, remember that judgment? A judge? Now listen to this one. On the 11th day, happening of God to make trouble, go straight. I know that Asher also has the word happy, but from the verb vase, it means one who walks straight or one who walks uprightly. All right, so here we have something is happening of God. God is causing something to happen. Not the man. God is happening, causing something to happen. He's going to make trouble. Guess what? You better walk straight. Walk uprightly. So it's kind of like a little bit of warning here, maybe. How you want to look at that, it doesn't make a difference to me. I just want thought it's fascinating. On the 12th day, verse 78. Now it's very funny, realizing what's going on. And the 11th day was happening of God to make trouble, go straight. Verse 58, brother of unpleasant, having eyes to perceive, understand, and wrestling or fighting. The judge has to see, and the judge has the eyes to see. He has the option to be able to perceive, and guess what he's going to do? He's going to fight. 12th chapter, verse 78, yes.
You said wrestle and struggle. So eyes to perceive.
Okay.
The judge is going to wrestle and struggle. This sounds like what Paul describes about the flesh and the spirit, that wars against each other.
I would even say, book of Revelations, the latter part, who's going against the people. Eight bowls, that's deadly. I'm not saying that's what it says, but keep thinking in mind that what has been written in the beginning tells you the end. And the end will be greater than the beginning. Now, remember this, this is my thinking. It's not a quote interpretation. It's what about how I look at things. Fine. Why all these names here? What do they all mean? Where's the aim at? Because I've gone through these names, these men, in the book of Genesis, in the book of Exodus, and now in the book of Numbers. I see a pattern over and over again about these names. Yes?
I was looking for the wrong verse. Could you tell me Number 12 again, please.
Okay, 12. On the 12th day, brother of unpleasant. Somebody's going to be unpleasant, all right? And son of having eyes to perceive. What does that mean? Oh, I can see. Understand. I understand what's going on. I see and know what's happening. And I'm going to bring forth trouble. I'm going to bring forth... I'll put it this way. Colonel Creator of Heaven said, I am the greatest terrorist the world will ever know. I'll terrorize people. Revelations? Talk about terror. That's the power of the Creator of Heaven and Earth doing tremendous amount of destruction. Not people, not Arabs, not Americans, not Jews, not Irish, not Catholics. God. Because why? On the fourth chapter of Revelation, who has in his hands the scrolls that God himself wrote? So this is God doing everything. We don't pay attention to that. We try to look at the world and see, okay, this must be a sign, that must be a sign. Why don't we just pay attention to what was written on the scroll? And know that a creator of heaven and earth is bringing about every single seal of and by himself, every single trumpet of and by itself, every single thunder of and by itself, and every single bowl of and by itself. That's from the creator of heaven and earth. Not from the devil, not from the earth, not from man, not from human beings, but from God himself. We have to pay attention. So we read the text. We start reading what's going on in Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, and Numbers, and Deuteronomy. We can see. And you go into prophets, then you see even greater. Do you want to know what Revelation says? Read the prophets. It tells you the same thing. Let's go on. Where was I at now? Sorry. Get a little bit. Good. Okay, you go into these things about each tribe had to give what? One silver plate and one bowl, both made out of silver. What was to be inside of or in on the plate and on the bowl? What was supposed to be on or in them? So you missed it, right? Because it got boring after a while, right? The Minhah. The Minhah. Oil and, okay, and the Minhah, the bread, which is unleavened. First thing first. Now, what are they bringing to him? What does the Minhah represent? It's manna. No, it's not. It's matzah. What is unleavened bread? What are they bringing to God? What? Purity and truth. They're going to giving. They're not giving God something that God doesn't want. God has commanded them to give them this. The first thing he wants from them is purity and truth. Did you notice that before? So all this boringness of going through these, each one of these 12 tribes had to go through this process of giving the very same exact thing for the very same exact purpose and reason. Now the next set was one bull, one ram, and one lamb of the first year. And that was for what? Whole offering. Burnt offering. The whole offering. Everything went up to God. Just those three. Why wasn't there 20, 30, 40, 50? Just okay. Each one had to give up three. Now, what did God want from them? What's a bull? What's a lamb? And what's a ram? What are they? What's the characteristic of a bull?
Strength.
What's the characteristic of a ram? Power. What's the characteristic of a lamb? Humble. Okay, I'll accept that one. So that's what God wants. He wants it completely given to him. The strength. And what was Ram? Bull, the strength and the power and humbleness. Or weakness, or let's say lowliness. Of all the animals here, isn't that sheep one of the dumbest ones?
No.
Not. Look, the bull is very smart. The ram knows what's doing. A sheep just follows wherever the shepherd tells him to go. We are like dumb sheep going astray. We're not like dumb bulls going astray. We're not like dumb rams going astray. We're not like dumb goats going astray. We're like dumb sheep going astray. We have to rely upon God taking over and letting each one of us handle our lives. Now the last part, very fascinating. He calls a goat. Now it's called a sin offering. I want you to make sure you're here next week if you can be. I'm going to explain that word in completion of sin. It's more than just missing the mark. It is far greater than that. But I'm not going to go through that today. But what this boils down to, and put it in a nutshell, the reason why there is a sin offering is for what reason? Why would there need to be a sin offering? To what? Okay, that's a good word. It was atoned for. The goat is the atonement. It's used on the day of Yom Kippurim, two of them. Atonement, something to cover. So when we talk about the sin offering, it's not about an offering of you committing sin. It's about an offering that your sin is being covered, forgotten. Now the last set is an oxen, two oxen, five rams, five he-goats, and five lambs. What they're for? What? Peace offering. Now, what does that mean? I'm at peace with you, and you're at peace with God, and God's at peace with you. It's all right? Okay. Literally translated, these are the ones that mean you are safe with me. Because that's what the word shalom really means. We have translated mean peace, meaning from being angry, now you're at peace. Or you're being against God, now you're with God. No, you are in his place of safety. And the Aaronic blessing, what's the last thing it says? Shalom. God will give you safety. He will safe, put you in safe place. So now we have all these 12. And they're all doing these things. And they're giving all their offerings and all the animals and so on and so forth. So what do you think so far? Did you see something you didn't see before? I hope so. Because I try to bring this out as much as I possibly can. Even though sometimes this particular chapter, I mean, I was watching you people and he was reading it on. Okay. Same thing. Same thing. Okay, same thing. I mean, after a while, 12 times. And everyone had to give exact same thing. What does that mean? What does God want from you? What does he want from you? Yes.
He says, what does he want from you? He wants kindness. He wants Micah 6:8. Walk humbly with your God. What are the other two? One is kindness. I know that by heart. It's gone. Just be just. Do what's right. Be kind and walk humbly with your God.
She's got it. She's going
same
to prophecy
thing
here. Anyway, I want to put a little bit different package. What does God want from you? What's this all about? First thing he wants is purity and truth. Second thing he wants from you is everything, the whole person. And the other thing he wants to give you in exchange is, I'm going to cover it up. I'm going to do that for you. I'm going to cover it up. The last thing I want you to know is when I do the covering up, you're in a safe place. You're now mine. Do you understand what I'm saying? Well, I just lost everybody. These offerings are so awesome. When I went to the book of Leviticus and read all these incredible offerings, what they were for, what their purpose is, I says, man, what a great God who provided everything for all of us to walk with him. His object is to bring many sons unto the glory of God himself and make them as glorious as he is and as his son is, as we will read next week.